Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening. This is Ken Kreitzer with another edition of CBSI Talking Business, interview series talking with business leaders in the fields of banking, insurance, customer service, digital marketing. And with the coronavirus crisis going on, one of the topics is helping healthcare providers, government officials be able to reach their customers and their constituencies. And to tell us about what's happening there, a major development Friday, is Rebecca Johnson, who is the president of Arlington, Virginia-based Numericall. Rebecca, how are you tonight?
Good. Thank you, Ken.
Well, Rebecca, we always enjoy talking with you. You really follow this field of the impact of call blocking and robocalling on brands, working to make sure brands are able to reach their customers. And the coronavirus has put a lot of noise out into the telephone and communications areas. Tell us a little bit about, if you would, what the Federal Communications Commission announced on Friday with their declaratory ruling, if you would.
Yeah, so the FCC, in efforts to assist the healthcare providers, government, legal entities in delivering communications related to the coronavirus, specifically around reducing the creating mitigation for spread, they needed to come out with a ruling to provide some clarity that these types of calls do constitute emergency, which gives them some exemptions around the consent language. So what we don't want, and it was good, this was a really good ruling from the FCC, so what we don't want are hospitals and government organizations scratching their head wondering, can we actually deliver this very important communication to the citizens or not? So they've removed that hurdle and given them the go-ahead to deliver these types of communications.
Well, that's so important, and one of the efforts that's been made, obviously, to prevent and reduce robocalling by unauthorized parties is to allow emergency services, and in this case, it could be calls from hospitals, from medical practices, to reach their constituencies. Tell us about the kind of organizations that this will benefit.
Yes, so specifically, and this is where there's going to be some interesting debate, but we got to go with what the FCC provided. And what the FCC provided is entities who are hospitals, healthcare providers, state and local health officials, or other government officials, and the inclusion of solution providers, entities who are delivering these communications on behalf of these specific groups, fall within this category. Now, what's interesting is this immediately, almost on the heels of it being published, the conversation started with, but wait a minute, I may have, my business might be essential during this time. Perhaps I need to deliver communications related to topics around the idea of COVID-19. The FCC did not include those groups. So I think it's going to be something that evolves over time. The first action from the FCC is the right action. Give clarity to the ones who are on the front lines. As we go further away from the front lines, we might see that there are other companies, and the banks should definitely, in the financial space, should be watching for this as well to see if there are any exemptions that they get. I don't know what the next step. It seems like we can't predict from one week to the other what's going to be a new level of emergency. So I think it's really important to continue to watch what comes out of the FCC with regards to definition of emergency type communications. But for now, those are the guardrails.
And what types of customers would be affected? Is this, because I kind of break things up into landlines, mobile phones, and then business phone numbers. Is it vary or is it all apply the same?
All apply the same, and it goes for voice and text communications. So it's anything, any of the communications on the voice or text channel from those organizations delivering information related to coronavirus as well as mitigation measures like stay in place, stay at home type messages. And another element is that, you know, the delivery of these calls is time sensitive or related to imminent health or safety risk. So it's not going to be communications from the hospital that says, here's what we're doing during this time. We've gotten an onslaught of COVID-19 communications. I think everybody has. So it's not going to be just FYI. These really need to be time-sensitive, imminent health or safety risk type communications.
Yes, we receive a message, I think, 7 o'clock every night from the mayor of White Plains, where I live, with how things are going and some of the stats. Our area has been particularly hard hit by cases of coronavirus. Is there a risk to any healthcare provider, emergency service organization of having their calls blocked because of remedies to prevent robocalling?
Unfortunately, yes, that is very much a risk. If we think about it for just a moment, not only have our everyday lives of what we do changed, but so have our calling patterns, our calling practices, the volume of calls. So our network and infrastructure looks a little different. I don't know if this will be the new norm, but here's where we are. So with that, it creates a challenge for the analytics, the sophisticated analytics that have come to expect a certain flow on the network, a certain type of scam on the network. It's now
Yes.
completely different. It's very different. And sadly, even during this time, you would like to think that humans would not stoop to a lower level, but apparently they have. There are actually scams going on. The FCC is doing a good job of, you know, bringing awareness and warning individuals. But the problem is the analytics cannot tell the difference between what is the appropriate COVID-19 communication with a legal one, a valid one, versus one that's not. And so that's where we are, unfortunately, in a current situation with these messages.
Now we're talking with Rebecca Johnson, who is the president of Arlington, Virginia-based Numericall. And Rebecca, tell us about the announcement of a new service that your company announced today, the Critical Call Registry.
Yeah, so in response to what the FCC published in this ruling, my team, very quickly, we looked at it, evaluated it, and realized that we could support, based on our current platform, our infrastructure, our integration into the analytics network, form the verification and vetting of these entities, delivering these types of messages, and protect their calls based on our existing services. We do not, as a country, have one central location for critical call lists. It is definitely a topic. You will see that the FCC has talked about it, but no one's really solved it. So in the matter of just a few days, based on where we were, we looked at our system and realized we can support this and we can do it right now. And I think what's important is during times like this, our government is doing a lot, especially the FCC. They have a heavy burden on their shoulders. I think it's time for industry, where we can, the innovators, to step up and take care of gaps that exist today and offer it up as a solution. So this has been a good experiment, honestly, working in this space to see how we all come together. I've been very pleased with regards to the analytics providers. We talk daily. We've got a plan in place. And I want to make one very important message with regards to the fraudulent actors. Better not think for one second that the carriers are not going to continue to protect consumers. If anything, we're going to get better at it because of this. So I'm really looking forward to see what comes out of this in the future for how we really solve this going forward, should we find ourselves in this situation again, which I hope not. But
well, hopefully this is a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic affecting our country and as it is right now. Now, tell us a little bit. Now, you mentioned the role of analytics. What are some of the key factors that you're watching very closely?
I think, you know, collectively as a group together, we are, the analytics are wonderful at identifying potential spams and scams that are going on. And so they are working overtime right now in order to identify that. By combining our critical call registry with what they see today, I think we're going to get better at being able to distinguish the good versus bad. And then the analytics to allow the truly critical communications to get through. And so that's a huge value add to the consumer. That's a huge value add to citizens, and the efforts of the really the coronavirus task force is putting out all of these issues and orders of how we're supposed to respond to this from the healthcare level.
And Rebecca, if you could just tell us, what are the kind of organizations you mentioned, first responders, healthcare organizations, that should sign up for the critical call registry that you've put together? And are there any other registries that providers such as those should sign up for?
So, again, the list is hospitals, healthcare providers, state and local health officials, other government officials, or solution providers delivering communications on their behalf. They definitely need to register their numbers that they use for critical communications in order to ensure that their calls are delivered. And with regards to other solutions, so far as Numerical knows, we are the only critical call registry that's established, but it would not surprise me if others are able to provide support. I would expect we all work together, but someone needed to answer the call, and Numerical did.
Okay, now how about other businesses? You've done so much work in recent years about helping brands, including financial service brands, banks, credit card companies, and others, to be able to stay in touch with their customers when remedies for robocalling have been blocking a lot of important commercial calls. Are there any other industries that should participate or be watching this very closely?
Ken, that is an excellent question. And from where we stand, now is absolutely the time you should be registering your numbers. The more information that we can give the analytics of who are the legal entities and what types of communications they're delivering, they can do a better job at identifying those calls that need to be blocked. And I'll go back to what I said in the beginning. The environment looks different now. The call patterns look different. So definitely on the financial side, if they were thinking about it, they should start taking some action. I haven't seen the data yet. I'm usually right when I make predictions in this space. I expect the call contact rate to go down. And it's most important right now, everybody's only reachable by phone. So you really need to make sure, just take that step and get your numbers registered. Those numbers will not be labeled critical, so we need to be realistic when we think about registering our numbers. Let's adhere to what the FCC has provided and respect the current urgent situation that we're in, but registering is definitely a necessity ever more now for your line of business.
Yes, and Rebecca, maybe you could mention talking to Rebecca Johnson, president of Numerical, based in Arlington, Virginia. Tell us again, what will happen when an emergency service provider registers their phone numbers that they're going to use for outbound emergency calls on your critical call registry? What will be the benefit? What will happen? What advantage will they have?
What we're going to do is, we worked out from an industry perspective, is that those calls will not be labeled fraud. They will not be labeled spam. They will continue to be monitored should the numbers be spoofed, should there be some activities that should not be occurring across those communications, because, and I'm only going to mention this one time, because we have not deployed StirShaken yet. We're not there yet. So in today's current environment, that's what we can expect. So you definitely need to take the steps to at least remove the hurdle of fraud, which could end up being default blocking on the carrier network if you don't do anything about it, and the spam, which presents negatively to consumers. We need to remove any negative labelings on these calls with the analytics providers, and those working with Numerical are ready to do so.
Very good. So this will enable emergency providers, medical practices, hospitals to reach all of the people that they need to get messages out to in their constituencies, and that's a very valuable service. Hey, Rebecca, why don't you just tell us a little bit about Numeric Oil based in Arlington. You've done a tremendous amount of work in this field of helping brands and emergency service providers, in this case, be able to reach their customers and their service areas.
Yeah, so, you know, who we are, Numeric Oil is the pioneer of robocall blocking and labeling. Our main goal and objective is to provide visibility and control in the new calling ecosystem. And, you know, putting this information and power into the hands of the enterprises and the call solution providers, BPOs, call centers, in order to understand how your calls are being treated at the terminating side, the last stop before it looks at your subscriber that you're trying to reach, you need to register your numbers so you get a link to that visibility and you take back some control to ensure that your identity of who you are is pushed all the way down to where it matters. And that's what we help.
Okay. And you do a great job. We always enjoy your presentations and talks at the PACE, Professional Association Customer Engagement meetings. And I assume that if anyone, an emergency service provider, wants to participate in this, that they can go to your website and find information and actually register their phone numbers for this.
That's correct. One click away. Absolutely. Numeric Oil.com.
Very good. We'll highlight that in the caption for our podcast today. But Rebecca, please stay well. How is everything in you're just across the Potomac River from downtown Washington where everything's happening. They got
that
the stimulus pact approved last night. What's the talk in Washington about the $2 trillion stimulus that was approved last night?
I think we're still trying to reconcile and take it all in at this point. Eventually, maybe next week, we can do a little talk around that. There seems
okay.
to be so much going on back and forth. And here's the interesting thing is I live in the area, in the community, where pretty much everybody who works in D.C. either goes over to Maryland or the Virginia side. So we're all working from home. I can tell you that I've been very pleased with the efforts that I can see and witness with my own eyes in the neighborhoods of everybody doing what they can, working from home. If anything, around the D.C. area, our hours of work have gone way up, and it's been a great spirit around here, just, you know, reporting from this area.
Hey, one question that we've been following, and we talked to a representative of Avaya last week on this, is that there's a tremendous amount of increased usage on the internet networks. Everybody's doing video conferencing, and everybody's using an increased amount of internet service and data services. Do you see that the networks are able to handle this increase in volume and demand acceptably well?
You know, I used to be over business continuity and disaster recovery planning. That was a part of my life at one point. And I have to say, at least from where I sit, and I've had conversations with people all over the country, there have been small little blips, but those are expectations. Anytime you're in this type of environment, your BCP and DR plans are not going to put you at running exactly like you were before the disaster or the issue happened. So the level that I'm seeing as a former BCP DR, you know, focused individual, I think it's going okay from my perspective. We have to be okay with a little bit of blips here and there. I think if we had a complete shutdown, we'd all be wishing that we had what we have today. So, you know, my mindset is I'm thankful for what we have. We're able to continue doing business at Numeric Oil. I see business continuing for a lot of the companies that we work with. And, you know, as long as we can, you know, stagger some of our work, which is what we do. Sometimes I change out to do my work late at night for some initiatives. I think we can keep the traffic and the volume at a decent level. But I haven't seen anything drastic on a negative side.
Well, Rebecca Johnson, thank you very much for taking time to explain the situation that you're following with the Federal Communications Commission ruling last week enabling emergency service providers to get messages out, and then also the critical call registry that your company has launched to help those emergency service organizations get their messages out on the phone phone numbers that they designate. So thank you. Great job with all this, Rebecca.
Thank you. It's our pleasure, and we're here to help.
Okay, well, best wishes to you and your family and everybody down in the Washington, D.C. area. Good to talk tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca Johnson, president of Arlington, Virginia-based Numerical, talking with us on CBSI Talking Business, a program of CBSI Services based in Harrison, New York, provider to the credit card industry of protection services, travel benefits, warranty protection services for over 30 years. And I want to thank Rebecca. And this is Ken Kratzer for CBSI Services. Have a good evening. Take care.